And you know, I really need to stop that abrupt thing, don't I? It's always so abrupt there. Hi, Paul. Hi, welcome to the show. Welcome to Paul English Live. Today's loose start is in keeping with all my loose starts. It is Thursday, the 13th of June, 2024. And it looks like winter outside here. This is Paul English Live. We're here on WBN 324 for the next couple of hours. Welcome to the show. It's a very exciting time of the year in England. We don't know what to look at next. There's football coming up. You may have heard of that sport. You're going to hear a lot more about it, I guess, over the next few weeks. And there's an even more interesting and pathetic sport, general elections. Be joined tonight by Paul B, and we might even be joined by you. Again, I'll just do a shout out here at the beginning. If you want to call into the show, you can quite easily. I'll mention more about it repeatedly throughout the show, but we've got the call-in studio set up tonight on StreamYard, and the link to that can be found at paulenglishlive.com. Been threatening for the last couple of weeks to knock up a kind of political speech, which I did a little bit earlier today. It's probably going to be quite desperate, but we might have to endure this during the course of the show. It came in at round about 10 minutes long. How about that? Is that too long for a party political broadcast? Nay, they say. Great. Hi, everybody, and welcome back. Good to have you here. And let's just kill a few things. Not any live creatures, of course. Hope you've been having a good time of things. Look at that. I'm actually sorting things out properly. And I didn't know what we were quite going to do today. Last week's show with Eric, by the way, was a blast. Got a lot of positive feedback on that. So shout out to Eric. We had a lot of fun, I thought. We must have, because it banged on for an extra hour. I don't think we finished until after about 11 o'clock last week. That's UK time, which would have been, what, 6 p.m. In the US? Although you wouldn't have caught that on WBN, because we're here for the next 2 hours. But sometimes, naughtily, we run past that and have an after show over on Rumble. And if you're a kind of chatting type, if your fingers need to plunge into the keyboard and you need to send out your pearls of wisdom, which would be great if you do, please feel free to hop on into the Rumble stream. You'll find the link to that over at paulenglishlive.com. So you can come on over there. There's a goodly little crowd in there already. The usual reprobates typing things in slowly but surely. We're building up with that. I'm joined here with Paul B. Paul, how are you on this fine, super, marvellous day?
I got to say that I'm better than average.
Are you?
But I don't know, any number of people would disagree with me, but anyways.
No, you know, I'm doing good. I'm doing good.
Are you?
Loving life in the U.S.
Fantastic. And it's only going to get better for all of us, isn't it? It's all going to get better, isn't it? And also, we've got Patrick's here, although he's muted at the moment. But Patrick, if you can hear, hi, welcome to the studio. There he is. Patrick, hi, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing quite well. It's a beautiful day here.
Is it? Where's here? Tell everybody where here is.
I'm in West Sweden, Wisconsin, northwestern Wisconsin.
Wow. I keep seeing Wisconsin everywhere. Wasn't I asking you some questions the other day about Wisconsin?
So, yeah, about a race.
That's it. Yeah, because I'm a motor racing junkie, which is really sad. You know, you have to reveal your weaknesses in due course as you spend more and more time on air blathering about things. But I am, really. Yeah, I've got two weaknesses, which is tennis and motor racing, and that's about it. And that's about the only stuff I ever watch on TV. It says, Paul, sounds like you've inhaled NO2. Am I all squeaky and high-pitched? Is something coming? Intermittent audio signals. Hang on just a minute, Patrick. So I've got something really strange. Sound choppy. Okay, hang on just a minute. Let me just check. Thank you for that. It's looking pretty good. Have I inhaled NO2? Let me just check. Where are you listening, XO? You're listening here on Rumble, and I sound as though I've got a high-pitched...
I monitored radiosoapbox.com. You sound fine there.
Cool. Okay. So I thought it is. So that means we've got the sample rates right. Sometimes that betrays me. Eric's just already written in and says he can't stand in the coming election. Sorry, I mean election. Yes, of course you do feel sorry, Eric. Do I still sound as though I'm taking nitrous oxide on Rumble?
I'm checking Rumble right now.
Yeah, just let's see. It's great. Sorry about this. We're just doing some audio streaming in-house stuff. Everything's fine on WBN. Cool. Thanks, Ria. Just got a message through there from the WBN guys. So the stream's coming through clear. So I think it's just a Rumble issue. But I've not changed anything on Rumble. But does that make any difference? No, it doesn't. Other bugger. Does it sound okay?
Carry on, and I'll check it out.
Well, look, if it's sounding weird to you on Rumble, still hang around in the Rumble chat and do that. And you can tune in on Radio Soapbox. You pick it up and or WBN324. All the links to all the feeds that we've got are on paulenglishlive.com. We're also going out on DLive as well, although I'm not monitoring that right now. But we are simulcasting into DLive, so we should be fine, I think. Are we fine? I feel fine.
No, not quite.
No?
Let me throw this back at you.
Oh, this is good. Is this from Rumble?
Well, yeah, it was. Did it straighten out?
No. Well, I can't really do anything about it. Let me just have a look. Nothing's changed at this end. How very odd. Paul, if you could check it maybe on DLive and see what it sounds there. Maybe it's a Rumble issue. Maybe it's just problems on Rumble. Yeah, I see that, John Possum Hales. Sound is tits up on Rumble, says Eric. That's a bit savage already. It's only just gone 8 o'clock. How weird. Tell you what, listen, with Rumble, I'm going to cut the feed on Rumble and restart. Rumble. Okay. In Soapbox. Oh, yeah, it is. Right, let's stop it. I'm going to stop Rumble. Whoop. So if you're listening on Rumble right now, it'll go dead for a second or two, and then we'll come back. Here we go. Sorry, guys, just let's get this started. There's always so much technical fun.
And thank you so much for letting us know. It was
it's great.
All mucked up.
Okay. So we are reconnected on Rumble.
DLive is good.
DLive's cool, but Rumble's bad. No changing to the settings. So we are, let me just, you can hear me clattering around. We are back on Rumble. We're bumbling on Rumble. We're having a Rumble bumble tumble. That's bad. I should be shot for saying things like that and probably will be. Is the sound still choppy and crap on Rumble, everyone? We're back up with you. So if anybody could just type.
There is no sound on Rumble right now.
Really? Do you think they don't like me? Is this the first sign of not being liked? Paranoia abounds. I didn't mean to start the show off with a technical dissertation, but we've got one. Sound is still intermittent on Rumble. Okay, so Dratsky. What can I say here? Well, Rumble's not vital for the show because we're going out over the radio and everything. So let me just say, please, I'm typing it in because you might not be able to.
Okay, here's the deal.
Yeah?
Rumble, there's a serious delay on Rumble. That's the problem. So when it came back, you're still dealing with the old bumbled part. So it should be cleaned up now.
Everybody
in the chat saying that it's okay. You've got like a 2 or 3 minute delay between you and Rumble.
Wow. So Rumble's really mucking. So far, okay on Rumble now. Brilliant. Thanks, guys. Thanks, everyone in the chat, for letting us know. It's really helpful. Everyone that put a comment in there, and we got us corrected. Now, you see, there I was, Paul, telling you that I'd just gone and put on my broadcast trousers to avoid such nonsense as this, and they didn't work today, so this was a bit of a problem. So where were we? We were in... it sounded as if Rumble had chronic flatulence. Oh, Eric, I do like you. I do like your description so much. That's good. That's excellent. Well, unfortunately, I wouldn't know. I don't know really what you're referring to. I don't know what chronic flatulence is. But we had it. Great. Well, now that the sound's fine, we can just end the show. All we wanted was a good quality sound. It's not as if we've got any content. No, that's not true. So where were we? Before we were rudely interrupted by Rumble giving us a tumble, we were in Wisconsin, weren't we, Patrick? We were just sitting around in Wisconsin. Yeah. Cool.
Northwest Wisconsin.
Oh, it's a beautiful day here. That's all I can say. It's a beautiful day. It's about 26 Celsius. Yeah, 78.
Right. That's great. I love doing weather sharing with people. Let me tell you what I'm looking at. It's grey. It's been grey all day. The wind is blowing a lot. There's rain in it. It's very cold. It's a typical spring day in England. It's supposed to be nearly summer. We've been promised 40-mile-an-hour winds at the weekend, which it's just the sort of speed I like. I like them just about 40 mile an hour. A bit higher than that, they're a bit of a pain. So I might have mentioned here before, where I am, there's a lot of windsurfers. And those guys that use the big kites, you know, to go leaping out of the water, which they do. So I would imagine that if we get the sort of winds that they've been forecasting, this is not to be confused with Eric's chronic flatulence type of wind, which he was talking about a few moments ago. We should see a lot of them out on the water. Over the weekend, bouncing around in the sky and all that kind of stuff. So that's good. Great. Wonderful. Well, I'm glad you're having nice weather and hopefully you're eating plenty of cheese. As I understand, Wisconsin is the cheese state. And I keep thinking that if I was to move to the States, I probably would go there. Yeah, I just love cheese. I really love it. So it's probably very bad for you, I suppose. The EU would frown upon it. Now, speaking about food, let me start off with a stupid anecdote that happened to me earlier. Actually, it's not so stupid, but it was quite fun. I go to a local... You know, sometimes these... Paul goes shopping, part 35, right? So I had to go and shop. It keeps coming up, this, with alarming regularity. You have to keep going out, you know, and buying stuff. And so I trundle on down to the supermarket yesterday, only to be greeted with it all being boarded up, and I just couldn't get in because they were upgrading it. Always a worry. It's a bit like software, right? They're going to upgrade it. So I couldn't shop there yesterday, but I had to go back today because there were certain things that this particular store sells, you know, the deluxe chocolate biscuits and things like this that make life worth living. So I headed on back down there. Anyway, I get in, and yes, they'd restructured the store very badly. I mean, I wasn't the only one. Not only were all the customers bumbling around, couldn't find anything because they'd moved everything across the shelves, which is terrible, you see. But also the staff, I could see there was a look of grumblage across most of their faces. They were not happy because they'd been fielding questions from customers nonstop since the store must have opened. But the really interesting thing was I had an exchange with one of them who I think was... Well, he certainly wasn't British, I can tell you. He was Italian or something like that. Not that I've got anything against the Italians. Not yet. Not until they beat us at football. But we'll come on to football in a little while, because even what I've just said there is a bit silly. But anyways, this guy's stocking the shelves. And what they've done, in front of all the fridge departments, they've put these big plastic doors, which I immediately disliked, because I'm like that. So you have to... You could see the food through these doors. This is gripping stuff, isn't it? I hope you're all really hanging on tenterhooks here. So I have to sort of open the doors up to find out where the food is. Now, when you open it up where you thought it used to be, you know, I'm looking for the avocados. They'd moved the bloody avocados, hadn't they? You know, I have to go off and talk to someone. I had to talk about four or five times to assistants. Where's this? Where's that? And so I'm opening this door, and there's a guy stocking it. And I said... Do you want some customer feedback? Because I do that. I don't think he did. I said, I don't like this. I just thought, if you want to pass it on, he said, why not? I said, because it's really difficult to find the food. I said, and it's irritating. And also, I said, you're going to get people getting repetitive strain injury from pulling these doors open. I was kind of winding him up a bit. I wasn't deadly serious, right? But he was deadly serious. And he said, this is very important that we do this. I said, oh, why is that? He said, to save the planet. I'm serious. This is what he said to me. And I'm sort of looking at him. I'm going, come again. He said, oh, yeah, it's to save the planet. I said, how so? He said, well, we're cutting down on refrigeration costs by keeping it cooler like this, and this makes the environment better. And then he laid it all on me. He said, and this means your children and grandchildren can grow up in a clean planet. And I said to him, you're barking mad. That's really exactly what I said to him. I said, are you all right? I said, it doesn't make any difference at all. I said, you know, the Chinese have just built 250 coal-powered fire stations and you're here putting fridge doors on and making me cross. I had my tongue in my cheek as I said it. The guy was completely humourless. Not British, you see. Couldn't take it. But whilst I'm having this exchange with him, there's a couple stood next to me further. I always end up talking to people because I'm like that. About 5 yards off to my right. So I trundle down. This guy turns to me and we just get talking. Well, that was it. His wife, she joined in for a bit, but she could see he was in for the day. We ended up talking for about 15 minutes. It was brilliant. We had a fantastic chat. And what we were really touching upon was the great seething fury that's bubbling under with real Britons, because he was one. And he was great. He was fantastic. And we were talking about all this climate scam, and he's going, yeah, tell me about it, that kind of stuff, right? And his wife was nodding. She said, you need to meet our son. I said, do I? Where is he? Is he here? You know, I don't know where he was. She said, oh, yeah, he's just come back from university. She said, but he doesn't read the newspapers or watch the television. I said, good. I said, I don't suppose you do. She said, no, we've all stopped doing that sort of stuff as well. I said, this is great. You know, it's like meeting buddies. They're out there. And if you just sort of get involved in a scene with people, other people that kind of hear you, they sometimes, this happens to me a lot, they'll chip in and we have a talk afterwards and it's really good. And they were basically running through the, well, not the sorts of things that we do to the depth that we've been covering them, but they were touching on all the right angles. And I said, are you voting then? And a look of wry disgust fell across their face. It was fantastic. Almost as if they were in the presence of Eric and his chronic flatulence. It was that bad. And we had a great chat. Wonderful guy. Stephen, I think he was called. Really good. We shook hands at the end of it. I said, look, I'll probably never see you again in my life, but keep up the fight. He said, people are sick of it, aren't they? I said, they just need to learn how to talk. I said, something's coming on the way. I said, our lives are just being mismanaged intentionally. And I guess you guys in the States, you know this. I know we're covering it in very general, gentle terms, but I'm very interested on how, who I consider to be sort of like the man and woman of the street. These were a really good English couple. They were just salt of the earth sort of people, really decent, that they're concerned about it. And I reckon the numbers are huge. It's just, there's still that sort of little lack of confidence in most people to sort of get gobby in public. I don't really have that problem. I quite like doing it, actually. So there you go. That was last week. It was those two little lads running around making me get hysterical as they treated the same store as like a toy shop. They were touching all the different food, so excited about vegetables and things. It was brilliant. And then this week I bump into them, so at least it's got some good reasons for going in there, you know, and doing all this sort of stuff. I asked the checkout girl as well. I said, I'm not too happy about all these stores. She said, oh, I am. I said, why is that? And I was expecting another environmental lecture. She only did it. She said, well, it's good for the planet. I went, yeah, right. Okay. But she said, no, the main reason is that they were all cold in the store. The refrigeration was making them all cold, so she's a lot warmer. I said, the cold does you good. Sharpens up the mind. Doesn't make any difference, you know. So that was a fun little moment, a fun little morning for me. So there we go.
Keeps the immune system peaked.
Yeah. Why weren't you there, Paul? Yeah. Next time I'll dial you up and you can speak to them over the phone. Here, listen to my pal in the States. He'll put you right. And right. Yeah.
Well, what I would have said to the guy in the cooler is, okay, well, I'll tell you what. This is a load of bollocks, and I'll tell you why. It's because China just built 250 massive cold-fired fireplaces.
Yeah.
And you're trying to save literally 1 pound of carbon by inconveniencing everybody that walks in this store.
Mm-hmm.
Good job, mate.
Well, you know, if I'd seen that my words were going to have any traction at all with this first guy that I was talking to, I would have carried on. I'm pretty civil. But there was nothing. I just, concrete block. Literally, he was on purpose, right? He knew it all, right? He knew it. No, we're destroying the planet, are we? You're going to save it, are you?
Yes.
It doesn't need saving. And I was saying to this guy, I said, the only thing the planet needs saving from are these arsehole politicians and these bankers. And he was going, yeah, tell me about it. So, you know,
I know when it's 30 below here, we wish there were more global warming when it gets down to 30 below Celsius here in the winter. And that's the time we need it.
You do
for it more.
I want you to have some, Patrick. I think it'd be great. Would it play havoc with the cheese, though, if it was warm in the winter? That's the main concern. What about cheese production? Would that nosedive, or would it be
boosted?
Cows
would like it. Yeah, cows would be less likely to die.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they would. They would. It is absolutely bizarre. I mean, I found, you know, all these dopey, idiotic wind turbine things that everybody's, oh, God, it's just backhanderville as far as I'm concerned. I've mentioned it here before. Where I am, they've put 60 of these hideous pieces of useless garbage technology, right? It's only there for political purposes. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah.
Oh, look, we're doing something to sort the planet out. No, you're not. They're all made in China. All those things are made in China. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember Animal Farm? That was the whole point. They're going to build the windmill, and that was going to bring in a utopia. Orwell's Animal Farm.
Hey, is that why you call your streaming efforts Windmiller Radio? Is it a tip of the hat to Orwell? Is that what it is?
Kinda, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. And then we have a windmill here from back in the day.
Yeah,
it's kind of derelict now, but we're restoring it. It has a water pump on the bottom,
right?
Those old hand pump type things. You can hook up the windmill to it, and you have your handy dandy pumped water from wind power. So, but I don't know.
I'm with you. You know, coal that's
power.
Good.
That's the way.
That's
to do
great.
It.
Yeah, no, that's you've just sparked something off in me as well. This guy Stephen that I was talking to. I have a brother-in-law. He's got to go in for surgery, so he won't catch this. But even if he did, good luck with the surgery. He's going to be okay. A little bit older than me, and a builder, great bricky, right? Knows everything about how to lay bricks and stuff. I'm just anybody that's good at stuff. I'm always interested to know, you know, what they're into. And he was a guy that once was telling me to go to Hampton Court. You might have heard of it. It was Henry VIII's favorite palace, and it still exists to this
with
day.
The chimneys?
Yeah. About the chimneys, have I banged on about
those? Oh,
those
are beautiful. I've seen those.
That's all he said. He said, have you seen the chimneys at Hampton Court? I went, no. He said, you got to go and look at the chimneys. I actually did. And they're brilliant. They're absolutely fantastic. Any time when builders are going crazy and doing beautiful stuff, it's wonderful. So I can understand why Henry enjoyed it. But one of the things he also told me, I've mentioned this a few times as well. A few years ago, I had to go back up north for my mum's funeral. It was 2018, and she'd had a good innings, but it was still a sad occasion. Anyway, we went out to a restaurant that she really liked, me and my brother and sister and a few of us, and it's up near a battlefield called Towton, which I may have mentioned before. And this came up in conversation with this guy today because it turns out that him and his wife also came from Yorkshire and they'd sloped off down south. And so we were sharing sort of little northern anecdotes. They said, we started and ended up talking about Doncaster for some reason. They said, oh, Doncaster's not in this world. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, we come from Doncaster and it's completely outside of this world. It's a totally different place. But Towton, I'm completely going off at 5,000 tangents, but so what? It's a radio show, right? We can do that. We're allowed to do that? We are. And Towton is the place of the biggest loss of British life in one day's battle anywhere, bigger than the Somme. It took place in 1350-61. I've got my dates from mid-1300s, part of the War of the Roses and all that kind of stuff. And 28,000 guys died in one day on Easter Sunday in that year. And then they were killing people for another 2 days. So the whole thing lasted 3 days. The battlefield's still there. You would barely notice it other than the plaque. And then when you look at it, you see it. It's big. It's a big sort of rolling field. And there's a little sort of story about all this, that, and the other. Anyway, back to power and energy. I just thought I'd throw that in for local colour, you know?
Well, metal detecting. That's what I'd want to do there.
Would you? Yeah. Well, there probably would be some stuff over there. I mean, I grew up where I grew up. There's a beck near me called Cock Beck, because this battlefield is only about 6 miles from where I grew up. And I used to go through all these sorts of fields, but I would never go 6 miles away when I was 8 or 9. That would have been scary. That would have been too far. But we used to go around all over the place. And there used to be a story that I grew up with, which we just thought was kind of like a sort of an old wives' tale or something. We didn't know it was real. It turned out to be real. This place called Cock Beck, the story was, and it's true, that it ran red with blood for 3 days. And then I found out it was from this battle, you see. And it was pivotal in the War of the Roses, this battle. But coming back to the energy thing, whilst we're stood on the battlefield, my brother-in-law is there, and he knows a thing or two about mining and all that kind of stuff, because that's his background. And he was telling me that there's a coal seam there. It's called, and it goes out to, there's a place called Selby. It's called the Selby Coal Seam. It's enormous, this thing. It goes out into the North Sea. There's enough coal in there to keep our country powered with electricity for 250 years. But no, we can't dig it up because it's dirty. Well, the bloody Chinese can. And the other thing is that they've come up with liquids and other technologies to apply to coke and coal to stop about 95% of all the pollutants that used to come out of those stacks going into the atmosphere. They can cut it right down. We've got that. There's fracking that they're a bit worried about, but there's loads of shale gas everywhere. And this guy knew all about this. Here I am talking to him in the supermarket. You see, you start off getting cross about not being able to find the cheese, which was a challenge today. Patrick, I couldn't find the cheese behind these doors, and I was getting a bit panicky about that because the house runs on cheese. And this guy steps in, he goes, yeah, and he starts talking about coal mining and all that kind of stuff. So it's all out there. People know that there are solutions, and they know that we are being denied them by these goofy, inbred, you know, I'll run out of words again as I usually do, but there we go. So that was a good little encounter in there. So let's get back to coal, shall we? And I've mentioned before, yeah, there was a guy, Pastor, he died recently, I've forgotten his name now, Williams, was it? Was sent up to Alaska. This is on your side of the water. There's an oil and gas field up in Alaska that would keep America going for 280 years. It's absolutely vast, and it's never been tapped. They found it about 1972, and they weren't allowed to get it out because the banks can't extend a loan to their own nation when you already own the stuff. I was talking to him about this. I said, it's these buggers all the, every single time, you know, we're living in this artificial space that they've created, and everybody thinks we've got real
fear mongering.
Hence the fear mongering. Yeah, absolutely. Hence all the fear mongering. So fun. Great. Yeah. Somebody also mentioned whilst we're still here, I was just looking about the co-op. Now, you might not have heard of the co-op. Exo mentioned earlier on in the chat, said, we used to have a huge chain called the Cooperative in England, now bought out by Walmart and Asda. Correct, we did. In fact, Exo,
you had,
Walmart?
To go.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, they bought out, there's a one of the first supermarket chains over here was called Asda, yet again, something that came from my hometown, I think from Leeds, which was shorthand, an abbreviation of Associated Dairies. And Associated Dairies basically expanded their sort of retail operation from milk and cheese, although they never went away from milk and cheese, thankfully. And they started to build supermarkets. And in due course, Walmart stepped in and bought them up. But I think, XO, that Walmart then sold out to some of our immigrant friends. Did I phrase that correctly? Look how nice I am. I think they did. There's two brothers that own it now. Someone's just put something in the chat and maybe correcting me. I don't know. But they came in and they bought it up. Hi, Caddy7. Welcome to the chat and the show. And yeah, they bought it up. So Asda used to be a very cost-effective place. It's not as cost-effective as it used to be. The joys of shopping, but bumping into people in the shopping space is... Well, you see, it's my life. It's pretty sad. It's quite tiny, my life, but there you go. You can always rustle up a good conversation with someone if you give it a go. The co-op, it was a brilliant institution, the co-op. And it's a great idea. It's a fantastic idea. We need to get back. The whole country needs to be a co-op. It's fantastic.
If I may, Walmart, from what I gather, started off as a store that's part of the U.S. military, and it's the PX shops, they call them. And it started off from that idea of supplying the military with goods, and then Sam Walton took it and made it into what it is now. But essentially, Walmart is, you know, started off as a military store and then grew from there.
Military?
There's all sorts of, U.S. military. What's on every base, there's a PX store, they call it, where the troops can buy their goods. You know, the wives can go and shop and get clothing and, you know, cheap goods usually. But we have co-ops here. We have the one closest to me is called Burnett Dairy. It used to be local farmer owned, and then some, I think we could call them carpetbaggers from New York came in and bought up the cooperative. And, you know, it was shortly after that we had the whole COVID thing, and lo and behold, we couldn't enter the store without masking up and all the crazy stuff that went on with it. So,
Yeah, there seems to be, broadly speaking, maybe two types of people. I mean, there's probably more than two types. I suppose there's loads, but certainly with regards to COVID and even with regards to this environmental blather, some people just, why do they buy this stuff hook, line, and sinker? I still can't get my brain around it. They're earnest. They're not stupid people, but they are easily deceived. There's some sort of bit missing. I think it's that great liberalitis. They want to show you just how much they care. You know, because this guy was kind of sort of lecturing me that the implication of what he was saying, which is why I just stopped talking to him because it was pointless, was that, you know, I'm ruthless. I don't care about the future health and well-being of children. That's the implication. That was the subtext of what he was saying. Because we've put doors on here, and you don't like the doors, but we've put the doors on to save electricity and therefore save the planet, and that means we're saving your children. You hate children. It was all coming. It was like instant written across his face. Yeah.
Right. Voting is kind of the same thing in a way. But that same mentality is used to justify going to vote. Like, you're a bad person if you don't vote. You don't care enough about who gets elected. And then you're responsible for the bad person that gets in if you don't vote. That kind of deal. You know, the shame that's supposed to come with it.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, quick shout out to Rumble. I think the sound must have settled well because I've not seen any more comments, so that's good. And speaking of sound and stuff, busy day setting up the show. Didn't get any tunes in place. How wrong of me to do that. So look, you've got a shout out for tunes or a song that you want us to play at some point throughout the show, stick it in the Rumble chat. We'll see what we can do. Paul seems to have sort of disappeared from our space, Patrick. Is that right? I can't see him.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Well, I've sent him a message. Yeah, maybe he's
I put a song request in the Rumble chat some ways.
Did you?
Yeah, it's a remix of Alex Jones.
Well, where would I get it? Where would we get that song?
I've got it in Rumble chat if you can get it from there. Otherwise, I can send you a link through Skype.
Oh, you put the link in Rumble chat? Yeah, I'm going to have to scroll through to it. Song request. Alex Jones, I need your help. Okay, I can see it. Right, I've got it.
I've talked with Frank Pat since passed away after that call he did with Alex Jones.
Right.
I just have to say something, man. It seems like every time I turn on.
It's only 1 minute and 41 seconds, but it's a little song, is it? Fantastic.
Yeah, just a little short, fun ditty.
Okay. Is this to do with his recent situation?
No. It's an older song, if you could call it that. But
should we run it now? I don't know what I'm letting myself in for, Patrick. What have you done to the show? Ahead. It's terrible. Okay, let's run it now. Okay, then we'll talk a bit about Alex Jones. I mean, this show follows Alex Jones. He was just on. I didn't manage to catch it because I was up to my neck.
I've been listening to a lot more Alex Jones than I have in years. So
you know what? So have I. Yes, so have I, actually. I just keep catching him. I mean, just to let you know, I announced this last week to everybody who's tuning in. This show obviously goes out over WBN. It's our main channel, and we get a goodly audience here, and I'm very thankful for that. So shout out to all the WBN crew. It's brilliant that we get on here. And it comes on after Alex Jones. So I've been picking up more and more of it because we're relaying that over Radio Soapbox, which is this kind of developing little situation. We hope, we're working away on it, to try and get a more sort of UK-centric schedule put together if we can find the people in a in a sort of energy efficient way. It's a bit of a challenge, but there we go. And I've been catching him a lot, particularly, of course, his recent situation is the winding up of InfoWars, apparently, but it appears to be more than apparent. It looks again. Like it's again
for the 10th time it? Or more. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's play. This is 1 minute and 41 seconds. It's called I Need Your Help, Frank, Alex Jones InfoWars Remix. Here we go. I think it's coming through, isn't it?
Yeah, Alex, I just have to say something, man. It seems like every time I turn on your broadcast, you're bragging. It just gets old, man.
I'm going to shut you down right now.
Punch me, I punch you back. And then I slam your head in the concrete. I'm not bragging, but
I probably read 200 naval history books. If I was to hit somebody 20 times, they'd probably die.
I just started spouting the stuff off. I don't even know how I know all this stuff.
Stop being gilded, domesticated garbage. Stop being weak. And when you see a threat coming down on you, deal with it.
I need your help, Frank.
People are cancer.
I'm done. I'm pissed. And I'm not putting up with it. I will go to hell before I sit here and I watch this country and the world turned over to these savages.
Take your vaccines and go to sleep and have an autoimmune response. And when you awake, you'll be retarded, which is just what we want.
Help, Frank. I need your help, Frank. Help, Frank. Help, Frank. Help, Frank. Help, Frank. Help, Frank. I need your 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 help, Frank.
Who's Frank, Patrick?
Okay, now Frank was a regular caller to Alex Jones's show, and he also called in to Jeff Rentz's show quite a lot.
Yeah.
And I even crossed paths with him talking with Dennis Fetcho once. So, he was good. He was always calling out Alex Jones for not going far enough in pointing out who's really behind things. So, he was quite the guy, and he died maybe like 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. So,
All right.
He's no longer with us. But
I might know that, Frank.
Classic.
Yeah, from other shows. Yeah. I think so. Yeah, he was a, I think I do.
He's a regular caller.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, he used to make some cracking little points.
He probably would have had his own show by now, I think.
Yeah.
The way he was going.
Yeah, I guess death kind of gets in the way of doing things like that, doesn't it? But, it will be interesting to see what happens with Jones. I'm not a sort of keen watcher of that space, but it does happen. And I'm also quite thankful that that was only 1 minute and 41 seconds long, Patrick. Okay, that was a little bit too noisy for my very delicate English ears. No, it was that was pretty cool, actually. So, we'd mentioned this thing. I was talking with some people about this the other day. I know that we've got all these different levels of communicators. And it is virtually impossible to kind of find out who we think is actually on the up and up. I just think my sort of rule of thumb is this. If these guys are allowed to continue and thrive and don't get interfered with too much, they're there because they serve a purpose of the other side, either knowingly or unknowingly. And yet you've got to have some kind of pathway into all the information. So if it provides that, I don't really mind, you know. I mean, who is it? Does it matter if I mind? Who am I? I'm just a guy in a shed in the middle of nowhere, really. But that's the way I've tended to view it. Some people, like Stu Peters, who many people might be familiar with, he's come to prominence, I feel, really, really quickly. And these operations, I mean, when Jones is doing his show, 3 hours, I mean, it's flat out. You've got to have a big support team to basically sort of, you know, rustle up all the information and get everything going. And all that kind of stuff. But I'm not expecting him to completely disappear. Are you? Are you expecting him to completely disappear? I can't see it myself.
No. It's his voice. That's InfoWars. They can't take that away.
Yeah. And there's reference here to someone who's very close, who you take a great interest in, which is Bill Cooper. Exo's put a couple of comments in there. I don't know if listeners out here are familiar with Bill Cooper. He was a pioneer in this field, really, in the 1990s, wasn't he? When did he supposedly commit suicide by shooting himself twice with a shotgun? Was that 2002, 2001?
No, that was it was never even seen as a suicide. It was basically what happened. The story went that the local police basically tried to lure him out of his house to arrest him.
That's right.
For some charge.
Yeah.
And it ended up being a shootout. So, or not a, I don't know if it was a shootout or not, actually, because I wasn't there. But they ended up shooting him on his doorstep.
He wasn't too favorable in his views towards Mr. Jones, was he? That's putting it mildly. At first
he was.
Yes.
He was. And he even went on his show. There's a copy of his show out there on the internet somewhere where you can find Bill Cooper and Alex Jones interviewing Bill Cooper.
Right.
But after that, it went downhill quick, you know, when... it's a long story. It's a long story. Toward the end, like his ninth to last show, and I think it was October of 2001, Bill Cooper just basically did an entire show calling Alex Jones a liar and a bullshit artist, is the words he used to describe Alex Jones, and couldn't be trusted.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, he was killed. So I don't know. We can't say because he's no longer with us. It would have been something, though, had Cooper stayed alive and been with us to this point, because he was exposing a lot of what was going on in the 80s and the 90s. He was a Vietnam War veteran.
Yeah.
That grew up in a military family.
He was Navy? Was he Navy, Bill Cooper?
Navy and then Air Force.
Oh, was he?
He was. I think he was first in the Air Force, then in the Navy. Navy through Vietnam.
Well, he's known for a book which maybe many people already are aware of, which is Behold a Pale Horse. I've had a copy since the mid-90s. I got one pretty early on, so that's 30 years ago. Good grief, I can't believe I'm saying these things. But it's still, to this day, an excellent primer for anybody, particularly the Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. I've probably mullered that. But you know that section that supposedly came out of a Xerox, an IBM Xerox photocopying machine? That document is chilling in the way that the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion is chilling, in that it's written by someone... It's like a psychopathic mentality that's writing it, like an engineer of how to process people and to destroy things. I found that that book was one of the most useful early books, and still is, that I read really into this space. You know, it was, I suppose, looking back on it, I must have been quite alarmed by it. But I was alarmed by a lot of things in the mid-90s, because I was with people who kept on feeding me information which kept alarming me all the time. And after about 2 years, I went, oh, so it turns out that prior to these 2 years, I knew nothing. Drat, what a pity, you know. But yeah, I liked Cooper very much. Really great guy. And some people
he used to tour with Eustace Mullins.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking about him having gone, but there's somebody who's returned, and that's Paul. Paul, welcome back to the realm of internet streaming. What did you do? You went down the pub. What's going on?
No, actually, my audio disconnected for one reason or another, and I couldn't get it to reconnect, so I just switched gears and routed audio through another system. So,
cool.
Am I back?
You're back. It's lovely to have you back. We were mildly worried, but I kind of thought in the back, I thought, if Rumble's having flummoxing, I bet you're having a little bit. So it's good to have you back. It really is good to have you back, Paul. We've missed you, haven't we, Patrick? We really missed you for these last 18 minutes or whenever it was. So it's great to have you back. Yeah, cool.
Well, I missed you guys terribly. Terribly.
We all missed
you. You know what was weird is I could still hear everything going on, and the feed to Global Voice Network is still working just fine. You just couldn't hear me. I was muted. I think it's a conspiracy or something.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a conspiracy.
Because Downstream worked wonderfully. I could have switched over to Rumble and just, you know, thrown my hands up and gone and made some popcorn or something. But no.
This show's chugging along quite nicely on platforms. I mean, you know, it's great. So I should give it, as I said, from WBN's the main outlet for the show. It's fantastic that we're here, and we're here for another hour and 15 minutes through to 5 p.m. Eastern here on WBN every Thursday. But we're also going out on, yeah, we've got their own Rumble feed here, and we're on DLive, which, as I said, I don't pay too much attention to. We're on Freefall South Africa, which is part of that sort of WBN grouping, but that's another station that we're on. We're on Global Voice Network, courtesy of you, Paul, which is brilliant, and your hidden crew. It makes the show quite spooky for me because these other voices come out of your presence in the show. It's quite good. Who said that? It's really weird. It throws me a bit. So that's quite good. And then we're also on Radio Soapbox, which is this fledgling thing that I've mentioned. So we're getting that up and running and trying to do things there and anywhere and everywhere. So, yeah, lots of toys, keeping busy. The only difference between men and boys is the size of their toys or something like that. Now, I mentioned...
What's your number?
Bless you, Paul.
What was that? You see, there was one of those voices. What was that?
Blessings, Paul. Blessings, Paul.
That's weird. It's weird. I feel like Scrooge hearing voices in the attic and stuff. This, what's going on? It's quite disturbing, actually. Maybe it's a new form of incestuous broadcasting where everybody plugs into everybody else's streaming and they're all talking at the same time. So, yeah, I quite like it. It's quite good. I don't know whether it's the future of broadcasting, but it looks as though it's the future of broadcasting here. So, wonderful. A shout. Look, see, the only song we got there was from Patrick. He's on the team here. This is no good. Look, you chaps in Rumble, dig up a song and throw something in the chat, will you? Otherwise, I'll have to pick something. And you don't want me to be doing that. That's really wrong. Actually, I've got loads of things I wouldn't mind playing, but I haven't had any time to set them up. There was that wonderful bit of music you sent me earlier in the week, Patrick, that classical stuff, but I haven't got that to hand for now, and we won't run that for now, but more good stuff coming through, I think, as the people in Rumble come up with a brilliant idea for some song. Maybe we should play There's a Hole in My Bucket. You played that the other day. Uh-huh. Is everybody... are you familiar with that song, Paul? There's a Hole in My Bucket? Harry Belafonte and
no.
Odetta?
No.
I think I might have to play that. It's when I heard it the other day, I'd not heard it for years, and it made me go all nostalgic. I really did go extremely nostalgic. So yeah, we might load that one up a little bit later in the show. There's still plenty of time for tunes and dancing and all that kind of stuff. Now, I'm just thinking about what order. There's a couple of things I want to cover. I mentioned, I think I mentioned it at the beginning of the show as well. I've talked about doing a series of little party political broadcasts for a political party that doesn't exist. And I've done one today, and it didn't quite turn out how I thought it would. It's quite serious, actually. It turns out that I'm quite a serious bugger on the side. And I'm going to play it. It's about 10 minutes long. We'll do that maybe... just after the top of the hour or at some point, and then we can carry on talking about that. But I want to talk about football. Let's talk about football in a particular way. So Skin Deep by the Stranglers. Oh, I don't like the Stranglers. You can look it up, Paul, if you like. Look at that. Some people are sending things through. Anyway. Procol Harum, Conquistador. Let's just talk about football for a bit. I did some shows a few years back. We had the Euros here in England. They were supposed to take place in 2020, and they were delayed for 1 year because of the COVID monstrosity. And so they ended up taking place in England in 2021, I think it was. Or maybe I've got that wrong, something like that. And no, I think that's right. And I did a series of little sort of mini, very brief podcasts on Odyssey, which I had at the time. They're probably still sticking up there. But I want to return to the theme that I was talking about, because beginning tomorrow, I think, Friday, the next edition, this thing takes place every 4 years. So it runs in the same year that the Olympics runs, which is also coming up. I'm not really a fan of the Olympics. And I'm not really a fan anymore of international football tournaments. I used to be when I was young. Because of the following reasons, right? And this is the points I was trying to make before. So soccer to you guys in the States, but we call it football over here for the cocky reason that the feet actually do hit the ball. It really is football. You actually control the ball with your feet all the time in British football. But we've got all these teams that have gone through some sort of qualification. It's called the Euros, so it's the European nations, supposedly. But it's a liberal use of the word nation. And so nation, let's just define what that is, because it's an important word. It's a tribe of people of the same race with a shared and received history, culture, and language. That's what a nation actually is. A tribe of people of the same race with a shared and received history, culture, and language. So you guys all know that I'm English. Well, you have to assume that I am, but I am. And I know that Paul is an American, as is Patrick, and we might have some people from Scotland listening and Wales and so on and so forth. So although we're all of the same race, we're in these different tribes, these different nations. So when we used to have international football, it was between teams, the players on the pitch were of those nations. And England used to field national teams all the time, up until I think round about mid-1970s. And this is a tender topic. We have to phrase it right, because people get a bit berserk about this kind of stuff. But it's a wonderful thing to talk about, to kind of open up the understanding of what's happening with the migration thing and why there is such a thing as race. So what's been happening ever since the mid-70s for England, and I think it's been across the board for most of the supposed national teams in Europe, is that they've had one or more players who are not of the nation. They're just not of it. Now, this is a terrible thing that I've just said, apparently. I've just said a terrible thing. But it's a terrible thing, and it cuts both ways. You can't, you know, I've made the observation that if England field a team that has got more than one race in it, there should be the primary race, but if they field it, and this goes for any nation at all, if that nation fields a football team, which it calls a national side, but it's got more than one race of players in it, it is completely not a national team. It stops being one. And although this is prissy, what I'm saying, I understand that England will be fielding a team with multiple races in it. Therefore, it cannot win this competition. By my definitions. This is meaningless, of course, in the realm of mass media. They will say that England won it, if they do win it. Not that I care. But they can't win it. Now, it turned out in the last one, the one that was held at Wembley, when they had the final, it was between Italy and... I can't remember. it was England. They made the final, I think. Was it Italy and England? I can't remember. Something like that. Anyway... the Italian team, when they came onto the pitch, I'd said that they had already won. And the reason the Italian team won, they didn't even need to play the match, because every single player in the Italian national football team was an Italian national. Therefore, they met the requirements for fielding a team. But the English team wasn't. So, as far as I was concerned, they'd lost it already just by walking onto the pitch. And it's a... I think for talking to people about football who get carried away all the time, and in many cases, you know, with club football, I think if you put a donkey in the team shirts, they'd still support it. I guess that's what people want to do, really, but I've no idea what it means. But it cuts both ways. So first of all the players that played football for this team called England couldn't win because it was not a national team. Secondly, the players that had been deceived into thinking that they were English and had been selected for that team were being robbed twice. First, they have been lied to about the fact that they can play for the English national team. You can't, just like I can't play if I was good enough for the Chinese national team. if I lived in Peking. I just couldn't play for it. And secondly, they're considerable footballing talents, and they are considerable. These are good players, great athletes, and all that kind of stuff. They are denying all of their footballing talents to their true nation. And I know what's going on here. Basically, the globalist communist effort has hijacked sport to effectively use it as a psychological battering ram to illustrate the fact that we can all get on and do things. But the simple truth of the matter is that these tournaments are meaningless. They have become, in sports terms, the equivalent of the Eurovision Song Contest, which is a dreadful thought. I don't know if you've ever witnessed that garbage, but it's the same sort of thing. It's absolutely mad. So no one, if any team fields a true national side, and I haven't even checked the player sheets or anything right now, we should declare them the winners right now. Say, well, you met the requirements of it. Because what's the point of holding, this is an open question to everybody in the chat now, what's the point of holding an international football tournament if barely any of the teams are national sides? And maybe this is a gentle way to introduce this topic without coming across as some racist crank, which of course I am now, simply because I raised it and brought it up. We shouldn't even consider this problem. But the tournaments themselves have become meaningless, in my view. They're culturally irrelevant. They don't mean anything because the energy of the people can't properly bind with the players. I don't begrudge these other players being brilliant at football, but why are they not playing for their national teams? And I'll tell you, here's another point it's just going back quite a way. There was a footballer in the 1960s who played in the British professional leagues in the first division for Manchester United. At the time, probably the best footballer on the planet for a period of 3 to 5 years, mid-60s, called George Best. And he was rightly named because he really was, for that period of time, the best footballer on the planet by a long way. Better than the Brazilians or anybody. And if you've seen any highlights of him playing and the tackles that he had to deal with and the pitches that he played on, it's quite amazing. Now, he came from Northern Ireland, which is tiny. And then, of course, this all goes back to the troubles with Ireland as well. But Northern Ireland fielded their own national team. This guy, the greatest footballer on the planet at the time, could never, ever play in a World Cup. Because, unfortunately, the pool of players that they were able to pick from in Northern Ireland was so small that no matter how good they were, and they were good, they just couldn't field the level of talent necessary to get through the qualifiers. So he never, ever played in a World Cup. He never got on the greatest stage in football ever. And yet all the professional footballers around the world said, this guy's the best footballer. And he was. There's no two ways about it. When he got on the major platforms in the European club competitions, he was amazing. Absolutely amazing stuff. So it's, you say, well, this is harsh and unfair. But it's the way it's designed, and it's what makes it work. We used to have these things. Here, they discontinued these things, probably for the very reasons that I want them, which is that they energize the nations. There was a tournament that used to be held here every year called the Home Internationals, and they were between Wales, Scotland, England and Northern Ireland, these four teams, and they would play each other. Some of those matches, they were like warfare. They were absolutely amazing matches. The level of skill was nowhere near what it is now. The level of fitness, neither, or the tactical nous. All of these things, of course, have improved in time. But the passion and the raw, that's what it was all about. It was connecting up with the people. So, you know, I view football, they've neutered it completely for me. And it's basically just an unwatchable adjunct to the entertainment industry. And now they're trying to tell us that they're putting on a European Nations Cup. I wish they really would. Somebody really needs to organise a proper one, and it would be great. Why can't we have proper, true international football again? Because some of those African sides that were full African sides in the 70s and 80s and 90s that played in the World Cup were exceptional. They were a lot of fun. They brought a totally different way of playing. All of that's gone. It's all gone. And you go, oh, Paul, stop banging on about bloody football. I'm not really banging on about football. I'm banging on about something that really added, it contributed to all of us. even people that didn't really watch football just got behind their national side. And we used to get beat all the time. We won it at home in 1966. We've won nothing since. And, of course, the newspapers just go on and on and on about it. But it's something, you know, were I king forever, I would seek to correct that. It would be virtually impossible, I suppose, because the globalist "we love everybody" crowd don't want that, because it re-strengthens national ties, and that's the last thing they want to see re-arise in the world, I suppose. Don't know what you think. Yeah.
The problem is global warming. Come on. With all this migration and changing ethnicities is, the earth is heating up.
Please.
What am I going to do? Is that really it? Did I say all that for nothing? Was that a waste of time? It probably was.
No. Well, no. Like you were saying about the Olympics is a perfect example of that. You know, the Greek word for nation, I think, is ethnos, which we get the word ethnicity.
Yeah.
And that was what it was all about. We get all the ethnicities together and see which one of them is best at which sport.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are better than others. And that whole idea is kind of being broken these days. I think the most extreme example of that is the whole idea of women's sports now being invaded by men pretending to be women.
Oh, yeah.
And mm-hmm. totally ruining the sport, which sport is, you know, there's the idea of good sportsmanship, meaning you follow rules, you follow set doctrine.
Yeah.
And there's a rule to the game and you follow it. If you break the rules, you're penalized or you're disqualified. And that's being given way to disorder.
Yes.
Chaos. And people don't like chaos. We naturally, as men and women, like order to things.
We do.
That beauty comes with that. And the beautiful is being replaced by ugliness because of laziness and all sorts of other factors. But those are my two cents.
I think we can trace it all back to global warming as well, Patrick. I think you're right. All goes back to that. Yeah. I mean, there was an announcement today, I don't know if it was here or in your neck of the woods, about swimming. Some guy pretending to be a woman had taken the swimming association, whatever it was, to court because he said, as a woman, I don't know, I have a right to compete against the other women. Anyway, some sense has seeped into that arena because they went, no, you're a bloke. This stuff has got to be cleared up. I mean, it's effectively, they politicize and use these things in a militant way to sow discord and to create the kind of disinterest and demoralization and disconnectedness which we see building up everywhere in all these different areas. And I settled on football purely because the following of it worldwide is colossal. And yet, I mean, I've said to my sons, they've watched things, and I said, look, I do sound like an old fart saying this, but it's unavoidable because the difference is a major difference. It's not just some casual sort of organic growth. This is totally artificial what's happened. You can tell it's a bogus influence from outside the arena that's brought this about. But if you watched World Cups in the 60s or the 70s, they were amazing, I think, in comparison to this. The amount of tension and passion from the Italian side and the Brazilian side and the English side and the German side, these were the top teams at the time in international football. There were several others that would come through as well. Holland came up in the early 70s. They playing a brilliant type of football. And you go, well, this is daft, putting all your energy into football. Yes, on one level it is. But for an hour and a half, if you want to sort of loose off steam and get connected to something and kind of, you know, in an indirect way, be connected to the outcome of a future for your people, you could see it on the football pitch, and it's fabulous. It's wonderful. It's silly. I accept that it's, on one level, it's really silly is sport, but it's 10 times better than shooting each other up and everything, and it vents an awful lot of good energy in a great way. And we've been denied that. It's really irritating. It's really irritating because everybody, all the players, would be much better off when they're actually playing for their national teams. Why can't we have that? He said pathetically. I'm not asking them. I know why we can't have it, right? Because it's not our decision. Someone has taken a decision above our heads to rearrange sport in a particular way. I mean, there are still certain sports that retain all the integrity they had of the past. I think tennis is one of them. I think golf is one of them, because these were solo sports that you don't have to form a national team. Although maybe you do actually in things like the Davis Cup and stuff like that. But overall, they still feel really good sports to me. They feel honourable. But what they've done with team sports by mangling it all up is absolutely ridiculous. And at least the Swimming Association got something right there. You know, that was pretty good. I was quite pleased about that.
American football isn't much better.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have nations, so to speak.
No.
We have states. And usually these football teams are of a particular location, you know, whether they're in the south or the north or the east or the west.
Yeah. Let's play that song. Shall we play that song? I think, you know, there might be a hole in all of our buckets. This is Harry Belafonte and Odetta. And I heard this the other day. You played it to me the other day, or I caught it somewhere. Could have of your stream,
yeah,
Patrick.
Yeah,
and I used to hear this loads when I was a wee lad in the kitchen on the radio back then. It's one of these sort of comedic songs from quite a while back. But here we go. We'll take this. It's about 4 minutes long. We'll run a few things. We'll be back after this short break. I'll be tracking comments in Rumble as well. Here we go.
Henry? Oh, Henry?
Yes, Liza?
Did you fetch the water?
Go fetch the water. There's a hole in the bucket. Dear Liza, there's a hole in the bucket. Dear Liza, a hole.
Well, fix it, dear Henry, dear Henry, dear Henry. Go fix it, dear Henry, fix it.
With what shall I fix it, dear Liza, with what shall I fix it, dear Liza, with what?
With a straw, dear Henry, dear Henry, dear Henry. With a straw, dear Henry, with a straw.
But the straw is too long, dear Liza, the straw is too long, dear Liza, too long.
Cut it, dear Henry, dear Henry, dear Henry. Well, cut it, dear Henry, dear Henry. Cut it.
With what shall I cut it, dear Liza, with what shall I cut it, dear Liza, with what?
With an axe, dear Henry, dear Henry, dear Henry, with an axe, dear Henry, with an axe.
The axe is too dull, dear Liza, the axe is too dull, dear Liza, too dull.
Sharpen it, dear Henry, dear Henry, dear Henry. Well, sharpen it, dear Henry, hone it.
On what shall I sharpen it, dear Liza, on what shall I hone it, dear Liza, on what?
On a stone, dear Henry, on a stone, dear Henry, on a stone.
But the stone is too dry, dear Liza, the stone is too dry, dear Liza, too dry.
Well, wet it, dear Henry, Well, wet it, dear Henry, wet it.
With what shall I wet it, dear Liza, with what shall I wet it, dear Liza, with what?
Try water, dear Henry, try water, dear Henry, Use water.
In what shall I fetch it, dear Liza, dear Liza? In what shall I fetch it, dear Liza? In what?
In a bucket, dear Henry, dear Henry, dear Henry. In a bucket, dear Henry, dear Henry. In a bucket.
There's a hole in the bucket, dear Liza, dear Liza. There's a hole in the bucket, dear Liza, a hole.
Attention all listeners, are you seeking uninterrupted access to WBN 324 Talk Radio despite incoming censorship hurdles? Well, it's a breeze. Just grab and download Opera Browser, then type in WBN324.zil and stay tuned for unfiltered discussions around the clock. That's WBN324.zil.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on the World Broadcasting Network are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of its owners, partners and other hosts or this network. Thank you for listening to WBN 324 Talk Radio.
And welcome back to part two. We're 10 minutes past the hour then when we played that odd little song. Someone wrote, Exa wrote, I'm having childhood flashbacks from this weird song. Me too. Is that
hilarious?
Have you heard it before, Paul?
No, never heard it.
Really?
But I could see it coming. I could see it coming. With what shall I wet it, dear Liza, dear Liza? Okay, here we go, full
it's
circle.
It's so innocent. I just loved it. And it just, it made me, I heard it. Patrick was streaming a couple of weeks ago, and I just went all funny hearing it, because I went, oh, that used to be on the radio in England, loads, when my mum would be put it on. They'd all start chuckling when she was cooking vegetables or whatever, you know, in the kitchen on a weekend. And that would often come up. They used to have sort of radio shows where there would be all these slightly humorous tunes. They used to make loads of them back in the 60s, sort of comedy singles and things like this. But yes. I love her enunciation and her emphasis. It's fantastic, with an axe. That's absolutely brilliant. So, it's a great song.
Young Paul, wash those vegetables, will you? With what shall I wash them, dear mother, dear mother?
Yeah.
When I was little, there was a Sesame Street version of that I watched, that I had heard before that version.
Yeah.
But so when I finally heard that later on, it was like, oh, yeah, that's from Sesame Street. I remember.
All right. Yeah. It's quite an old tune, but that's a great rendition of it. That's Harry Belafonte and Odetta, and I like that a lot. I really do. So there you go. We got quirky, nostalgic,
old music
stuff. Yeah, I love it.
Those old 78s and 45s.
I know.
They just bring you back.
Well, they do, because there's a kind of spirit of innocence about them as well. It's just playful, gentle, kindly, good-natured humor shot through the lyrics. And I like that. It lasts, you know. It's childish as well. That's the thing about it. It's like I was saying about those little lads the other week, which I obviously keep banging on about, running around the store, treating all the bananas and everything like a toy. I get hysterical over stuff like that because it's so childish. You know, like that thing when people fall over. Why is it so funny? It's always funny, isn't it? When someone falls on their back for no apparent reason, because instantaneously they are robbed of all, we are all robbed instantaneously of any dignity you've been trying to hang on to. It's just gone like that. It's very funny. So yeah, more falling over, please. That's what we want in public life. Joe Biden's doing quite well at that. He falls over two or three times a week, doesn't he?
yeah,
world champion on that kind of stuff. So brilliant.
Mumbles and fumbles.
Yeah. Absolutely, bumbles and fumbles.
Well, that and he's a catalyst for places of interest and tourist traps. Northeast. He was out riding his bike and he wiped out. And not too long after, Google Maps started reporting that area as Brandon Falls. And it's still there today.
Is it really?
It's still there. So yeah, somebody put up a site of interest, places of interest entry in Google, and it's still there. That's hilariously funny.
It is. It is. Should I play this little sort of speech thing that I did? It's about 10 minutes long. It's quite a chunk, really, isn't
it?
10 minutes. We'll do it. Yeah, we'll do it. We'll see if it goes. If it's embarrassing, it's embarrassing. But let's give it a go. It was just an idea I had. So I've got it here. And it's got a little sound clip in the middle of it. Yeah. So the context for this, he said laboriously and tediously, is I was thinking that, you know, this is not actually over the top. My original draft was a little bit too, it was a bit too heavy. So I've sort of reined it in a bit. But we've got this general election coming up here in, is it 4 weeks today or 3 weeks today? I don't know.
Independence Day.
Yeah, 3 weeks today.
Also the birthday of the Illuminati.
Oh, jolly good. That's the day. Yeah. If I was ever going to break...
The Whig history.
If I was ever going to pick a day on which I would break my lifetime habit of never... It's not a habit. My intention of never voting for these creatures, this would be the day, but I'm not going to break that habit. So here we go. This is about 10 minutes long. I'll run it through. Let's see how it goes. Then it'll spark some talking points anyway, I think. There now follows a party political broadcast on behalf of the political party that does not exist, but that you likely wish did once you have heard what they have to say. Hello. In a few weeks' time, on Thursday, the 4th of July, here in Britain, some people will go to the polls and cast their vote in what is referred to as the general election. Many of you have been doing this sort of thing for many years, and some of you will perhaps be doing it for the first time. You do so, no doubt, in the hope that the party you vote for will be elected on policies that they have promised to deliver, and that the welfare of the country will thereby be much improved. It really is, at best, a most tenuous hope. Opinion polls currently indicate a win for the Labour Party, who have been out of power for many years. The turnout, that is, the number of people who will actually go to the polls and cast a vote, is expected to be low, with some papers informing us that this is because the leaders of these parties, Rishi Sunak for the Conservatives and Keir Starmer for the Labour Party, are both dull as dishwater. At least that is what the Guardian newspaper, that bastion of impartial reporting, is telling us. A bit like a broken clock, even the Guardian can be right every now and then. Irrespective of which party wins, and therefore which dull as dishwater so-called leader the people of these islands will have to endure for the next few years, no substantial or lasting improvement to the quality of our lives should be expected. This is because it is not the political party of the day that is the chief power of the land, but another group, or collection of groups, that determine the fundamental policies of our nation. Groups and individuals who have intentionally made themselves virtually unknown to the general public. We refer to these groups as the money power. Some months back, the ex-Prime Minister of the UK, Liz Truss, made an appearance on a US radio show. You may remember that Liz Truss, just like the current so-called Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, was not directly appointed by the people of the UK, but was selected by the Conservative Party decision-makers. She had very low approval ratings from the public and lasted a mere 49 days, the shortest tenure of any UK Prime Minister. In which brief spell she served Queen Elizabeth II and King Charles III. Please pay close attention to what she said on that show. Here it is.
What I found out when I got into number 10 is I thought that if I got to the top of the tree, I would be able to implement those Conservative policies.
So you think once you're Prime Minister, as a little girl thinking, if I get Prime Minister, I'll be like Churchill, I'll change the country.
Exactly.
That's not how it works.
Exactly. And what I discovered was that I was not holding the levers. The levers were held by the Bank of England, by the Office of Budget Responsibility. They weren't held by the Prime Minister or the Chancellor. And I think that's a massive problem.
Hang on. You're saying the central bank, the Bank of England, is one of the things that controls it. Are you a conspiracy theory person? Well, you almost sound like Wurm. You're MAGA.
What I'm saying, Steve, is that if the Bank of England governor can't be sacked and the Prime Minister can be sacked, then the Bank of England governor is going to have more power than the Prime Minister. And that is a problem in a democracy.
Ironic, is it not, that Liz Truss, the shortest-serving Prime Minister ever, said more pertinent truth in that 1 minute than all the Prime Ministers you and I have lived under in our entire lifetimes. If that is the first time you have heard that clip, you may be asking yourself why you have not come across it in the mainstream media. It is a very telling and vital communication, after all. You may be asking yourself why no current politicians have made reference to it, nor have they shown any concern about the implications of what she said. Their indifference tells its own story. To clarify, the UK government, no matter how much it may pretend to the contrary, is not in charge of the UK, as Liz Truss found out. That task is in the hands of the money power, of which the Bank of England forms a primary part, along with the corporations and organisations of the City of London. Now, given that what we are saying here is true, and it is, what would be the point of you voting for a party, any party, if, once elected, it is incapable of having a free hand to serve the electorate and fulfil the promises it made to you on the campaign trail? If the major, pivotal decisions affecting the welfare of the people of these islands cannot be made by the government without say-so of the money power, what is the point of having a government? What is the point of having an election at all? The other day, a canvassing team for one of the main political parties was in my street and just happened to be outside my front door as I stepped out. A man with a clipboard cheerfully asked me if I was the householder and then remarked that there was a note on his sheet saying to not bother knocking on my door. He asked me why that was. I told him I did not vote, and no doubt some previous canvassers had marked that down. Ah, that would explain it, he said. I asked him why he was wasting his time drumming up votes for a party that would not, because it could not, keep any of its promises. As you can imagine, this did not go down too well. He informed me that he thought voting did make a difference, and there we parted ways. His view is a common one, understandably so. There are two initial points to communicate and gain support and understanding on with regards to this issue. First, we must create awareness of the issue. The vast majority of people do not even know that this problem exists. This is not surprising considering the wall of silence that has been built up around it. School children shall be taught about this aspect of national life so that subsequent generations are able to ensure that this major pitfall is avoided in the future. At least, that would be the aim. Second, we must indicate and in part show the tremendous benefits and advantages that can come into all our lives once we remove the bank from private control and make it the servant of the people, and not, as is currently the case, its master. Just as it is the master of politicians, such as Liz Truss. Amongst these tremendous benefits would be a reduction in the amount of taxation and the number of taxes levied on the British. Over 400 different taxes existed at the last count. Banking would become a service industry designed to furnish us with sufficient spending power to meet all the exchanges of goods and services. Charging interest on loans would be abolished, banks generating modest income through fixed service charges. And when the bank did make a surplus, that surplus would be distributed equally amongst all the shareholders. In our case, the British people. In your case, you. We will also be able to control our barriers and deal with the migrant issue, sort out the housing challenge and deal with the energy requirements of the nation in a much more effective way once we are clear about the economics and the banking. But until we sort out the bank and its private power, the money power, we will continue to limp along and see the decay of all that our forefathers left to us. Solve the bank problem first, and then politics, particularly local politics, has at least a chance to act as a servant of the people and not as the pathetic, fraudulent distraction that it has become. That was a party political broadcast on behalf of the political party that does not exist, but that you may now wish did exist, given what you have just heard, so that we can bring our nation back to financial, intellectual, physical, and spiritual health. Please look out for more broadcasts like this in the weeks to come in the run-up to the jolly old UK general election on July the 4th. And there we have it. So I just knocked that out because I think I needed to do it to get it out of my system. That was the idea behind that. And it is a bit, what's the word, what would you call it? It's a bit snotty that I did such a thing. But I wanted to do it to just see if we could nail things down.
Yeah, it's good. No, now you brought it into existence. It was a fake party in your mind until it came out, and now we all know it, and now we have someone to rally around, and Paul.
And you have nobody to vote for. Yeah, this is the whole idea. I didn't see the point in doing something. I mean, we'll see. I'm probably going to release that and push that out across Telegram, maybe, hopefully as an advert to try and, you know, increase the audience size here for the show. It may be viewed to be a little bit sort of up its own bottom. I accept all that. But it was just a sort of a communications format that I think's worth trying. And with subsequent ones, we might be able to improve them even further and get them there. Because it seems to me that the authority, the supposed authority that the political class have determined themselves to be able to wield, is all assumed. And it was also a good place to really use that clip from Liz Truss. She was universally disliked, as I said. She was in for 49 days, and yet in that 1 minute, she actually put her finger on the primary cause of all of our problems, and of course it's been totally ignored, not covered one whit in the mainstream media here at all. No one's even mentioned it. And that was on the Steve Bannon show, as many people probably know, and he's having his own troubles right now, I think, possibly facing prison time or something. And I'm not necessarily a fan of Steve Bannon, that's not what it's about, or of Liz Truss, but I think it does show, you know, I know I bang on about this, but I think it just has to be banged on about. The solutions to this problem have been enacted in the past. Many people who tune into this show will be aware of them. We're aware of the plight of Germany in the last century, both in the First, but particularly in the Second World War. We've talked about Libya and what Gaddafi did to put the economy at the service of the people. And we know what happens to those nations. And we know from the work of Stephen Mitford Goodson that this is a pattern that repeats over and over and over again throughout history, going all the way back to the Greeks and the Romans, that a kind of wealthy patrician class rises up and then begins to put in place sort of social engineering and control mechanisms which begin to fracture and reduce and destroy the actual wealth of the people. And of course, I did it also because I actually just, what is the point of voting? There's probably some better arguments to be made. And like I was saying, I did meet this guy at the thing the other day. He knocked on the door and I thought, I'd like to have an argument with you, but he didn't want to have one. So he just went off. So it was pointless. And we think that voting really makes a difference. And I'm going, well, you know, in my own mind, good luck with that. And I'll just give a shout out. Yeah, you know, in 3 weeks' time, as I said, on this day, on Thursday, the 4th of July, it's general election night. So we'll try and do an election night special, but it's got to be full of fun. I don't know whether that means we actually report the results as they're coming through. It probably make me ill to do something like that. But we should see writ large the sheer pointlessness of all of this nonsense. I mean, It's exhausting to know that this is the best that we've got. Keir Starmer, Sir Keir Starmer, is a flake of the highest order. It looks, as I said there, that from the newspaper reports, supposedly the Labour Party are going to get in. But as we've mentioned here before, and it's the same in the States, it doesn't matter who you vote for. The problem is the government, i.e. the money power, always gets in. It's always there. And it's dictating things to our prime ministers. So what's the point of having one? What is the point of having a prime minister or a political class if somebody else is telling it what to do? So we need to find out who is, you know, is telling them what to do and smack them very hard somewhere. Yeah.
Upside the head.
Yes. Paul, may I read an excerpt from a book I have here?
Of course you can. Can you turn your volume up? You're a little quiet. If you could just a little bit more volume, Patrick, that would be useful as well. Yeah, please do.
Is this any better?
Yeah, that's great. That's really good.
Okay. So this is a book I have. I inherited it from my grandfather, and it's signed by Charles Lindbergh. It's called Lindbergh of Minnesota Biography, Political Biography of Charles Lindbergh Sr. And it's about Charles Lindbergh Sr.'s time in office. So here it goes. The intern session allowed Lindbergh time to introduce two resolutions in December 1912. One called for an investigation of trusts through the House Committee on Banking and Currency, and the second outlined a bill that would compel all members of Congress to file complete financial statements to be published regularly in the Congressional Record. Both requests were issues that Lindbergh had presented to the House on previous occasions. In early February 1913, Lindbergh, who had been elected to serve on the House Committee on Elections of President, Vice President, and Representatives in Congress in April 1912, voiced his support before the House both for direct primaries and for the election of the President by a direct popular vote. Quote, "I am unalterably opposed to the placing of any limit whatever upon the free choice of the people for the high office of President of the United States," Lindbergh stated. He was also opposed to the proposed amendment that would limit one man's tenure in the office of president to 1 6-year term. And I'll end it there, but that kind of gives you an idea of what he was after. He was the one that wrote the minority report against the Federal Reserve Act when that was passed.
Yes.
In 1913. And he was calling for basically the abolition of the Electoral College, which actually elects the president here in the United States. And many people, I'm sure, in Britain wonder why out of a population of over 350 million people, we only have two candidates running that both seem to be very questionable characters. And I think getting rid of the, like Lindbergh was saying, get rid of that middleman of the Electoral College.
Yes.
And making it a direct popular vote would go a long way toward that.
Well, it would. It's like, there's no reason when you think about it. Of course, most people don't think about it. But with the technology that is available with regards to databases and so on and so forth, of course, the key question is, who's going to be in control of that? But you're right. There's no reason why everything can't be far more direct. But, of course, all these technologies have been used to actually make them more and more indirect by going through all sorts of hurdles all the time so that we can't directly express it. You see, I'm not necessarily a fan of democracy because I'm not. I'm really more of a fan of aristocracy. Because I think that the people with brains, of course, it's how you regulate this stuff. I know that all these things are fraught with problems, and history shows us this. But the people with brains should be in charge of things. I want them to be. Why would I want someone without brains and knowledge to be there purely because he says, no, it's equal opportunities? It's not equal opportunities. None of us are equal to anybody else. But the spirit of cooperation and a good attitude to one another is what's been taken out. And so, you know, what happened here in England is that the aristocracy became profligate, spent all its money, interbred with the banking class during the 1700s and 1800s, and that was it. It doesn't do its job, which is to defend the peasants. I'm a peasant. And I don't have a problem with being a peasant. We don't have a problem with an elite. as long as it's not hostile towards us. But the elites are hostile towards us. Therefore, it's a major problem. You don't feel, just going back to football, you don't just find 11 blokes who are English and go, right, you're going to play for England tonight. That's not particularly wise. Not if you want to have any sense of purpose about the whole project. It's a bit dense. Oh, it's equal opportunity. I'm a bloke. I can kick a ball. I think I have a right to play for England. Well, someone's going to make a decision about that. And it's the same in politics. And it needs to be the same in banking. And I know it's a dry and dull topic. And I've probably got to find ways to liven it up even further. But I've mentioned here before that this is also one of the great challenges we face. How do you make this topic and these sort of related topics vigorous and captivating to people? Because it ought to be. And the reason I guess it isn't is because most people do not have, understandably so, they've never been given it, a background sort of understanding for why these things are so important. We do not know the actual state of the economy at all, and never have, because it's all regulated through a central bank that can just lie and does about what's going on. So, you know, they'll lie in a particular way so that all the power aggregates to them more fully all the time. And, you know, so I'm not saying anything that's new. And we want to learn from history, and we want to find places in history where it's succeeded, and we have. But then we found out that, as I mentioned before, all the countries or nations that have succeeded in this way, they got bombed. You know, they got bombed.
Yeah. It's interesting that the words democratic and demographic, you know, are from the same roots, basically.
Yes.
And what you're saying is basic that the using the football analogy, that England isn't properly being represented as English.
No. No, it's not.
It's not.
So it's not England.
Because the And it's just been a gradual demographic decline of population, and as time goes on, because you're being replaced.
Yes.
Your labor is being cheapened by imports of alien labor, where they should stay home.
Yeah.
And make their countries great.
Yes.
And instead of brain draining from their countries and bringing them here or wherever that here may be for the people listening.
Yes.
And actually represent the people. Real, you know, democracy in its essence is actually a good thing, I would say, because if you are actually representing a people, you have authority and you have something that basically builds up the ethnicity, builds up that culture.
Yeah.
What good is multiculturalism if it's just one big blob of everybody and every little tradition and religion and look of people? You know, everybody looks the same. And, well, there's nothing wrong with looking the same, but I'm just saying that if there's no difference and there's nothing, no quality placed on being who you are as a people, what good is it?
Yeah. Multiculturalism is code for no culturalism, isn't it, or something like that?
Yeah, it's not real. It's not real diversity.
It's real, not real culture. It's cultureless.
Yeah,
because culture arises from race. That's what makes it so. So you know, when they say diversity is our strength, that's a cack-handed two multiple meaning sentence. In nature, diversity is a strength because it naturally occurs. But what they're saying is, by forcing you all together into the same bit of real estate and calling you diverse, and then we, your supposed leaders, telling you that it's our strength, you might buy into that because, you know, we don't want you to, you don't want to be nasty to other people. Of course not. We don't. In fact, we're not nasty to other people. This is part, it's not part of the problem, I should say. It's as if we should be nasty. I don't want to be nasty. If we did, if we wanted naturally to be nasty to other people, we would have been. But that same ruling crew is the one that precipitated all the wars in the first place over the past X hundred years for this drive to get everybody conforming under a globalist, i.e. communist situation. And, you know, the other thing is that central banks, the best thing that they can create is communists. They want them. They paid for it because getting the whole nation in debt and controlling it that way It's just groovy if you're into all that kind of stuff. So it's in private hands. I mean, there's a politician over here called Michael Portillo, and he's done a whole series of things about the rail networks, which, you know, if you're into trains and stuff, it's quite interesting. And he travels all over the place, and gave him something to do after he got booted out of politics. He wasn't a particularly effective politician, but I guess it doesn't really matter too much, does it? He was in the cabinet, whatever that might mean. But there was one scene where he's in London. I can't remember where, and he's kind of looking... He's looking west over at number 10 Downing Street for the political centre and the Houses of Parliament. And he's looking east to the city. And his comment was something along the lines of, he said, here we have in the west the government, and here we have in the east the City of London. And the argument down through the ages is, who's got the most power? Well, it's not an argument, Michael. We all know. We all know who's got the power, because they've got the political class dancing to its tune, because it's compromised. So it's very difficult. Exo writes an incredibly sober and true statement here where he says, money will never be sexy, Paul. I know. Oh boy, do I know it. It brings everybody's stuff up, because the first emotional response everybody has is, I haven't got enough. Don't talk to me about money. I hate it, you know. But of course, well, that's it's a terrible sort of chain around us. And
there is that parable of Jesus basically being handed a coin and him asking whose face is on the coin, and they say, well, it's Caesar's coin.
Yeah.
And he says to them, well, render to Caesar what is Caesar's and what is God to God.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to contemplate in this matter of,
I agree with you,
we consider valuable,
because I agree
politics
with you.
Is basically what we contemplate. Aristotle said that, like, mm-hmm. all politics is the thing which you contemplate.
Yep.
So as a society, we contemplate a particular thing, elections. That's,
yes.
That's something we contemplate. That's politics.
It
so
is.
If we can steer that to where we want it as our invisible or now visible imaginary party of people,
mm-hmm.
We can actually make real world bring things into reality, make it from just mere thought to an actual thing.
I agree. Yeah,
just like they do.
We have to speak,
harness that.
Yes, the world,
because right now,
go on. Sorry,
they're basically drunk driving their horse drunk, and we need to hop on that horse and take the reins.
Yes, we do. Yeah, we do. They're very drunk. Drunk on power.
It's going to take getting over the fear, because a lot of people have fear.
Yes, I agree with you. I have it too. That's why these are sort of like nudges to try and creep up on the topic. How do we get it across? But you're absolutely right. And there's nothing new under the sun with this. You're quoting scripture. There's nothing new under the sun. It's the same, you know, the form's different, the technology's different, the scale of it with the amount of human beings that are on the planet, so we are told, which does appear to be quite a lot, makes all these other issues rise up. But the idea, you know, the point that you're making, that politics is what we contemplate, is absolutely true. And look at the great leader of the fields of contemplation, TV. Contemplate this. Think about this. Why not think about that? Why not think about none of it? I mean, it's keeping that sort of mind lock going and knowing how to break out of it. I mean, when it has happened, like we said, you know, Libya is the best, most recent example. The drunken drivers of the main central banking system just blew it to pieces once it became a major thorn in their side. There has to be some mechanism, something maybe that we've not seen before. Or, you know, then we're talking maybe about things like great spiritual awakenings or spiritual convictions, which sounds a little wet when you first say it, because it's got to be harnessed, it seems to me, to action, to doing things. And it's knowing quite what to do. But they've spoken this world into existence, and unfortunately most people keep listening to it. We have to form some kind of ad hoc way of speaking the world that we want to live in into existence, it seems to me. So, you know, setting these agendas for contemplation, I think, is absolutely vital. Even though at times you look at it and go, this is so difficult. And it appears as though it shouldn't be. You know, you should be able to just talk to people and they go, yeah, of course. Well, that's silly. Yeah, right, let's get rid of the bank then. Well, we don't need to get rid of it, but I think you need to. We all need to have a stake in it, you know, because we're a nation. Why can't we all own the thing that we're all going to use? Yeah, great. Anybody tried that before in the past? Yes. What happened to them? They got bombed. Oh, well, better go home and think about that one. It's totally understandable. I'm the same, you know. So, what a great tiresome challenge it is to talk about it. It's why you can't dwell on it too long, because it does become boring. You end up sort of getting blocked. It's a great form of black magic, it seems to me. The whole banking thing. Your mind goes into the dark when you start thinking about it. Because, as I said, people rightly associate it with a lot of negative stuff, like too many bills, not enough money. And everybody then gets into the whole the economy game and making piles of money. Bitcoin's been the latest sort of super version of that. It's going to save us. No, it isn't. It's nothing to do with the form of the money. It's to do with the structuring of the governance and who's in charge and how do we stop those buggers being in charge. And because we're not as ruthless and as foul as they are, because they are ruthless and they have become foul or allowed themselves to do it, we don't want to touch it with a barge pole because we don't want to get tainted with it. And rightly so. We need divine intervention, you see. We just do.
And we also need to teach children.
Yes.
Basically indoctrinate children properly, not with false doctrine, but with true doctrine, things that are actually good for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
a problem.
What they do.
Yeah.
That's a problem. They've spent literally decades indoctrinating the children, generations, to think and believe the way they want them to think and believe. So how much time is it going to take to not only undo the indoctrination of the people that are around now, but to indoctrinate the new generations the way they should be, teach them the way they should be taught? How much time is it going to take, and how much time do we have?
Well, I think it's hopeful with children because us as men are naturally inclined to the truth, and more so in that innocent state. You want the truth. You know, when mommy and dad lie to you and say Santa Claus is real and comes down the chimney, you know.
Doesn't he?
There's a real...
The children are listening, Patrick. You've just destroyed a lot of Christmas. No, you haven't.
Well, I haven't said it. Yeah, right. But
yeah.
They know. They know. Just it's inherent in our nature.
They do.
Hey, Patrick, you know what you get if you shift a couple of letters around in Santa Claus, right? Satan's claws. Why would you want to let your children sit on the lap within reach of Satan's claws?
Well, that's the Groucho Marx joke about the sanity clause. You know, in the contract.
Should we have a song?
Yeah, but
have a song?
It
works out beautifully.
Yeah, you've sent a song
beautifully
over
because you don't have. Yeah, I did.
You did.
Who did?
You did. You sent a song over. Yeah, there was a request earlier on, so I don't know who made it. My apologies. I can't track back on the thing. Procol Harum, Conquistador, 4 minutes. Here we go.
Upon your silk sheet, and in your rust. rusty scabbard now. The Santa's taken seat.
Who brought that crowd in? That was good. I never heard that one before. Is that a new one on anybody else here? I never heard that before. How about that?
I hadn't heard it till the other day, and I thought I wrote down the song name, and I'm like, we're going to play that on Paul's show. It's pretty good.
That was good. All right. It's pretty good, actually. Yeah. I don't think we've ever played White a Shade of Pale in the song, have we? I know it's their classic one and all that kind of stuff, but... You know.
Yeah, that's really the only one I knew.
I have that one too.
Yeah, we're running out of time. We'll maybe save that. Yeah, they did a version of that. He's no longer alive. He did one, a version about 2005 with a Danish classical orchestra at a garden party. Have you seen that one? That version of it? It's amazing. His vocals are so good. I went, wow. He got better. I don't suppose they're known for so many songs, but that one's just absolutely standout. So, yeah, really good stuff. Cool. Towards the end of the show anyway.
That was
so
recommended.
Yeah.
By Reconciliation.
Which is me.
In the chat.
That's my handle.
Okay.
All right. On the internet, you can be a dog, can't you? Or you can be a reconciliator. You can be anything you like. Yeah, I haven't told everybody. I'm the guy putting all the messages in the chat room under loads of multiple ideas. No, I'm not at all. I'm not at all. So,
We couldn't play Whiter Shade of Pale because Pale's not with us today.
No, he's not. Hey, you know what? Maybe it's a good reason to rope him in at some point down the line. Yeah, we'll do that. The version I'm thinking of is absolutely outstanding.
Song for you.
Yeah. It's great. I'm bad at the timing of these things. I play them at the wrong time, just as we're about to wind up and wrap up and everything. But Yeah, so Procol Harum.
Send me the best version you've got. I'll recode it and send it back to you.
Okay. Well, I'll remember that. I think we'll probably run that for next week. By the way, just a reminder here to everybody, if we do a sort of longer version of an election night special, you guys that are in the chat and gals and everything, if you feel like calling into the show, it would be great, you know, every now and again to just hear from you. Obviously, we hear from you in the chat, and that's really cool. I do like it. I suppose everybody feels quite comfortable with the chat thing going, and I'm kind of got used to it after several months of looking at the whole thing, so it works well. But you're always welcome to call in and say your piece or your pieces or whatever if you get the urge. So the
how are
more
they
of us
call in?
Pardon? You're going to call in.
How are they going to call in?
Oh yeah, the way they call in. Sorry, what a dumbo. If you type in a web address, which is paulenglishlive.com/call, C-A-L-L, paulenglishlive.com/call, and it'll automatically redirect you into a StreamYard studio. Some of you will be familiar with that. Don't let that put you off. It's just you have to set up your microphone and your speakers, which if you've got a headset will automatically do it on your machine, and you'll just come in to into an online room. I'm in there all alone. No, I'm not really, because I'm here in another room, obviously, with Paul and Patrick, and we're discussing. But that door remains open. We had a flurry of calls when I first started that, but I guess everybody's got more comfy with the chat. I'm cool with whatever anybody wants to do, but I'm just letting you know the opportunity is always there if you want to chip in and do stuff. So,
hey, Paul.
Yeah.
I think doing an election night special would be excellent. I mean, I wouldn't be avoiding any election stuff going on, because ours, of course, isn't until November, if it even happens anyway. But I think it would be great to give people something intelligent to listen to rather than sitting in front of a tube, listening to airheads blathering on and falling all over themselves praising the next favored son. And you know that they're going to be doing it all the way through the election coverage. They're going to have glowing things to say about who is chosen to take the election, and not very much good to say about the other guy at all. You know how the election's going to turn out before it even ends.
Well, we could morph it. You know, you did use the phrase intelligent discussion, and I'm looking around going, where are we going to get some of that? So, no, I'm teasing a bit.
I did an interview not that long ago with John Barber, and he lives in Las Vegas, and he was saying that the biggest bets are usually on the president, who's going to be president.
Like, yeah.
In Vegas, it's legal to bet on the outcome of an election. I'm sure it's probably the same there for your elections, Paul.
Oh yeah, I'm a gambling man.
So, but
I'm not really.
His strategy for betting on who is going to lose, he said, whoever in the debates gets the most laughs,
yeah,
is usually the one who loses.
Right.
So, figure that one out. You know, hedge your bets based on that little tidbit. So whoever gets the most laughs. So if you look at it,
mm-hmm.
Trump and Biden. Biden right now is getting the most laughs because it's just ridiculous. The things he's saying, the way he behaves, that he's not taken seriously.
Well, he can't be. He's obviously there. Oh, we know what he's there for. You know, I don't know what to think about him. Is it worth spending any time thinking about him? He's just obviously the plaything of the controllers, isn't he?
But it just kind of tells you what people think.
Yes, I guess it does. Yeah. I guess what we could do as well on, in a few weeks' time, because it is the 4th of July, you guys probably want to chip in something about beating us to a pulp in 1776. I think we should have a bit of that, because I think it's relevant. I mean, I don't know what you're doing. Do you do anything?
Yeah, that would be good.
It would be good. It's the 4th of July,
fireworks.
And I think we ought to. Yeah, do you?
Everybody has big parties, fireworks, with their families,
flags.
Fireworks. No work. It's a holy day. It's a sect,
yeah.
You know, the Americanist, religion has their holy day of July 4th.
Yeah.
That's it.
Maybe we can talk about my impression of it is that we never lost to the Brits. We were in bankruptcy, and we basically laid down our guns And we said we won, but we didn't really win anything because they still are in control. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I wish it was me. I wish I was one of the Brits that was still in control. I'd help you out a bit if I could. But of course, as we know, everybody that's tried to help the people, the rest of the mob does them in. That's what they're fearful of, isn't it? It's like a, you know, a sack of rats all chewing each other's hindquarters or whatever. So we're going to have to see how things unfold. It does appear, really, it's such a colossal structured mess, although it's an intentional mess. And, you know, whoever it is that's in charge of things, they're desperate to retain that control, even though we would just wish they'd all just bugger off. But you can't seem to sort of get them interested in that. Anyway, we're wrapping up. Last 20 seconds. You've been listening to Paul English Live here on WBN 324, Freefall Radio, South Africa Radio, Soapbox, Global Voice Network, and the rest. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back again next week at the same time, 3 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. in the UK. And we're off the air right now.